This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NBA draft may be over, but the NBA news cycle never ends. We're going to be covering a lot of NBA news items, including, is this the summer of Giannis? Here on Prop Points, I'm Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are from rotowire.com. We're going to preview tonight's WNBA slate as well. Alan Sislowski is going to drop on by, talk some fantasy football with us. And then we're going to do over-unders. We're going to talk about tonight's baseball slate as well. Full slate on tap for us here today. Nick, you know, there was a lot of speculation when Dame got hurt and the Bucks got eliminated that Giannis was going to be on the trade block. That rumor mill's kind of died down, but now that the draft is over, you know, I'm seeing a little bit more momentum to this. We're seeing some more betting odds. Still, the Bucks a heavy favorite to retain his services. The people I talk to say, oh, he's not going. He was monitoring the draft. What say you? You're close to the situation there.
Yeah, I guess I'm geographically close to the situation here in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And
emotionally,
you know, it
close,
is interesting. I'm emotionally close. I'm geographically close. Yes, I think it's interesting to note that, you know, a few weeks ago, if you look at the DraftKings Sportsbook, you know, the Giannis next team odds, the Bucks were around like minus 150, minus 190. They were favorites, of course, to retain his services. That number dropped all the way down to minus 500 prior to the draft. It's now minus 300 at the DK Sportsbook. I'm not sure exactly what that's based on. You know, you would think that if a Giannis move was going to happen, maybe it would have been before the draft. You know, a lot of the teams that could be in the Giannis sweepstakes had valuable picks that they may have wanted to put on the table, but really the ball is in Giannis's court, Jeff. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks are not going to trade Giannis unless Giannis comes to them and says, look, I want out. Here are the teams that I would prefer to go to. That's not going to happen unless Giannis actually takes that step. And, you know, he's such a unique person. He's such a unique superstar in this league. I'm still having a difficult time getting a read on whether that will ultimately be the case. And, you know, I think with everything that's happened in the Eastern Conference over the last few weeks, with Halliburton going down, with Tatum going down, you know, some other teams making moves to kind of throw their hat in the ring, it is more conceivable now that I think the Milwaukee Bucks could sell Giannis on a two-year plan. Okay, here's what we're going to do this summer. We have some contracts coming off the books over the next couple of years. This is the path back to contention as quickly as possible. To me, it depends on how Giannis views this coming season, because, you know, the Bucks can put that plan out there. I still don't think there's really a path to Milwaukee winning the Eastern Conference, winning the NBA Finals next year. If Giannis is willing to treat this as somewhat of a gap year, and then, you know, the idea is you get Dame back, you reload two seasons from now. Okay. That's something that we can discuss, but you know, Giannis is in his 30s, right? I mean, time is you know, somewhat running out on him in terms of his prime years. And I don't know, Jeff, if he's going to be one of these guys who is still an elite player when he's 36, 37, 38, you know, like we're seeing with LeBron James, like we're seeing with Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant. He's such a unique body type. You know, he relies so much on the athleticism, the physicality, hasn't really developed a jump shot at any point in his career, at least not a reliable one. So the ball's in Giannis's court. That's really what it comes down to. Again, the Bucks aren't going to do anything until Giannis comes to them and says, I want out.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You mentioned KD, and yes, he's been elite, and yet his teams haven't done much lately. In fact, he doesn't seem like he's a guy to build around anymore. And Giannis strikes me as like, that would be a problem, especially like you said, no jump shot, horrific free throw shooter. And I think that's right. Something that you really have to kind of take into account, because his game is getting to the line a lot too. You know, hacky Giannis is a thing, actually. That doesn't strike me as like something you want to mortgage your future for. I thought it was noteworthy that the third highest odds to trade for Giannis, or for Giannis's next team, I should say, are the Raptors, who made news yesterday by parting ways with Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, really, really interesting story. That actually happened early this morning. And, you know, Ujiri, of course, has, you know, connections with a lot of the NBA international programs, a lot of the international players in the league. So I think the firing of Ujiri makes Giannis to Toronto maybe a little less likely. But either way, this was a really surprising move. I mean, not that long ago, Jeff, Masai Ujiri was considered one of the best, if not the best, executives in the NBA. He was kind of the blueprint, right? And you know, you look back and all of a sudden the Raptors have just one playoff berth in the last 5 years. You know, there's a new ownership group that has a controlling interest in the holding company that owns the Toronto Raptors, so maybe they want to get some of their own personnel in the building. But either way, really weird to let him go the day after the draft. So like, Masai Ujiri is running the draft for the Toronto Raptors. You let him take Colin Murray Boyles, you know, with the number 9 overall pick, you know, you let him basically run the entire program and then you let him go a day after that. You would think if this move was coming, you would have wanted to get your own guy in before the NBA draft.
Yeah, you would think so. Makes me wonder, was there like a veto vote here? Did he do something? Did he take a player that they wanted him to take another player instead and he didn't? They wanted him to pull a trade and he didn't. And, you know, it makes me wonder, like, was there some sort of event or non-event that triggered this? You know, I'm kind of curious to see what happened there with that, but you never know. You've seen that happen in the NFL before. I think the Jets did something like that one time where they fired their GM like the day after the draft or
that sounds
shortly
like the Jets.
After the draft. Yeah, it sounds so Jets. Citation needed there, but occasionally you see that. And it's just like, yeah, what? Mm-hmm. You're talking about handling a rebuild. And, you know, that's like the toughest stage, the most important stage to have a stability in the front office there a little bit. So very odd to consider that here. Headline I read, Nick, that I'm going to have you help me explain this because you know the NBA better than me, is Austin Reaves declined the Lakers, you know, max extension, $82.9 million offer. This is a max deal, right? I guess is this just so he wants to be a free agent? Why would he do this?
He's doing this so he can, you know, essentially opt out next summer and make significantly more money. You know, that the Lakers can only offer him, you know, the extension that they put on the table, which is, you know, close to $90 million over the next 4 seasons. But after this coming season, he will almost certainly opt out of that deal. He'll become an unrestricted, free agent. And in that scenario, he can command significantly more money on the open market. So I think if you're the Lakers, of course, you have to throw that deal out there. You're certainly hoping that Austin Reaves takes it. He's already on a well below market contract for his services, given the type of player that he's been, especially over the last 2 years, and really the player that he blossomed into over the course of this past season. I think the Lakers were really lucky when they signed him to that extension that another team did not come in with a better offer. I know the Spurs at the time were the team that everybody thought, you know, they're the ones that are going to push the Lakers on this. And they decided to sit out. And, you know, there were reports at the time that, you know, other teams around the league who didn't have cap space to do that were looking at the Spurs like, what's going on, guys? Come on. Like, why are you letting the Lakers just get Austin Reaves on this bargain contract? So I think Reaves and his representation kind of realized that they're playing on a bargain already. They're not going to give the Lakers another discount. And look, if the Lakers want to retain his services beyond this season, they're going to have to pay up to do so. And I think that's a really, really interesting decision because, you know, he is an older prospect. He's a guy who spent, you know, 4 years in college, didn't really blossom into the player that he is until his mid-20s. So, you know, if you're looking at a 4-year extension, that's going to take him through what, his age 32 season. You know, you're going to be paying top of the market value for a guy who's really, really good. But is he an all-star? You know, he's probably a nice third banana on a really good team. You know, when your top two are Luka Doncic and LeBron James, Austin Reaves as the number 3 guy makes a lot of sense. If he's your second best player, if he's your best player, I don't know if you're going that far. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what LA does after this season, because at some point, Jeff, I know it seems inconceivable, there's going to be a future without LeBron James. And I don't know if Austin Reaves on a max deal as your number 2 next to Luka Doncic makes a ton of sense long-term.
Kind of raises whether or not like the Lakers might, if things go sideways this season, maybe they trade Reaves at the deadline, something of that nature. Now, they're not expected to go sideways. They're the 6th shortest odds for the NBA title, plus 1,400 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. 4th shortest to win the West at plus 900, tied with the Nuggets as far as that goes. I mean, I honestly think that the Nuggets are a far better position than the Lakers are. I think the Lakers always get this helium when it comes to these sort of odds, but we'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the Lakers essentially are running back last year's roster. You know, I think the sell is that, okay, now you have a full off season. You get Luka Doncic in your program. You hope that he's in better shape going into next year. And you got to figure out the center spot, right? I mean, they basically played out the second half of last year without a viable center on the roster. And we saw the Lakers move up twice last night. They ended up getting all the way up to pick 36, where they took Adu Thiero out of Arkansas, who I like. You know, there were some people that had him, you know, ranked as a borderline lottery prospect. That seems a little rich to me, but he is the type of defensive center, you know, kind of a rim runner offensively, not going to give you a whole lot other than that, but a big time shot blocker, a guy with, you know, excellent length, a rim protector. But if you're depending on the 36th overall pick, you know, to be the guy at center next year, that's a little bit dicey. I think they'll bring in some players on the margins. You know, they'll work with the limited space that they have to beef up that position. But, you know, unless you're putting Reeves on the table, which I don't think they would this offseason, it's going to be difficult for the Lakers to find a significant upgrade at center. So the hope is that the arrow can hit the ground running right away. I think the Lakers will be in the mix, Jeff. You're like, wait, LeBron is still playing at a high level. Obviously, Luka Doncic still a top five guy. You know, there is a really high floor, I think, for this Lakers team. But I'm with you, man. If I have to pick between the Lakers and the Nuggets, who have similar odds to win the West right now, I am going with the team that has Nikola Jokic on the roster.
We're going to talk round two of the NBA draft. All the Brooks Barnheiser talk you can get. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. I have to allude to this. I got to give Barnheiser a little bit of love. Second Northwestern player ever drafted, first since 1999, drafted by OKC in the second round. Go Brooks, go Cats. What else jumped at you in the second round in 20 seconds, Nick?
In 20 seconds, well, I like what Charlotte did, grabbing Ryan Kalkbrenner, who to me was the best player on the board. They grabbed Zion James as well, a really nice defensive prospect, big body guy out of Duke. So kind of offsets, you know, the type of players that they took in round one and Konkanipple and Liam McNeely. But we'll talk some more second round takeaways on the other side.
Absolutely. We're going to do more second round talk. There are some Cooper flag props already, and we'll preview the WNBA slate for tonight. All coming up next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. We're going to be talking a little NBA in about 5 minutes, but first, get some other NBA reactions, mostly draft reactions. I want to start off with Ace Bailey, Nick. Hasn't reported to Utah yet. Doesn't need to today, but he also hasn't been in contact with the team that much. Teammate Walter Clayton has flown out to Utah. The summer league starts this next week. What's your level of concern if you are Utah? Maybe not your personal level of concern, but, you know, Bailey kind of said he didn't list Utah as one of the teams he wanted to go to.
Well, it is the NBA draft, Jeff. This is not some sort of free agency period. Right. You know, Ace Bailey to me is not, he's not the caliber of prospect where, you know, he has the kind of sway to, you know, force his way to a certain destination. You know, we've seen this a couple of times over the years in the NFL, right, where you have a projected number one pick who, you know, essentially withholds his services or, you know, threatens to go back to college to kind of, you know, get to his preferred landing spot. You don't really get to do that when you're not like the no doubt number one or number two pick with Ace Bailey. So I, whatever leverage he's trying to generate, you know, this is just really looking bad on him and his camp. I don't think there's a whole lot of Ace Bailey sympathizers out there right now. As far as, you know, the reporting on this, you know, Brian Windhorst has been on top of it. He said, you know, there's no crisis yet. The Jazz are not panicking, but it's a little odd. I mean, he was drafted two nights ago. Usually players will fly to their destination either the night of or the next morning. You know, you start doing the introductory press conferences. You do, you know, the shaking hands, the kissing babies, you do the photo shoot and you start to get acclimated. And, you know, NBA Summer League starts in basically a week, week and a half. So really the deadline for Ace Bailey to get to Utah is Monday. That's when they essentially start, you know, a mini camp ahead of Summer League. If he's not there by Sunday or Monday, this is going to get really interesting. There's not a whole lot of precedent for this, especially in recent NBA history. You know, the Jazz, you know, for their part, don't seem to be budging on this. You know, I don't think we're going to see, you know, Ace Bailey turned around and traded in the next week, but I have no idea where this is going to go. We have a guy who's handled this entire draft process very bizarrely. You have an agent who's not an actual agent. It's just Sharif Cooper from Auburn's dad who's just pulling the strings here, and it's been a total disaster so far. I guess Utah knew what they were signing up for here, but this is going to get very, very interesting over the weekend if we don't see Ace Bailey in Salt Lake City by Monday.
Yeah. Did they, though? Did they really know what they were signing up for there? A lot of hurt people saying, like, praise them for calling his bluff. Okay, well, that's a great way to start a relationship.
Yeah.
But the only thing that parallel comes to mind for me is Kobe Bryant. That's how far back we have to go. You realize Kobe was the 13th pick in the draft? It wasn't like this is like, you know, Eli Manning refusing to play for the Chargers. This is something that's, you know, down in, a little farther down in the draft, a little bit there. So I think it's a rare situation to be sure. Cooper Flagg, there are already props up for him.
There are. There are. We talked a little rookie of the year yesterday, and at that time, Cooper Flagg, by the way, was minus 200 to be the rookie of the year. That number has dropped a bit. He's now minus 185. Also interesting that Trey Johnson, who both myself and Ricky O'Donnell, who we had on the program yesterday, said that might be the best value on the board. He's now down to 10-1 from 12-1. So we'll continue to see some minor movement in terms of the rookie of the year, but we have some stat-based props up for Cooper Flagg as well. The over under 16.9 points per game, a very specific number for Cooper Flagg next year. It's minus 115 both ways. If I had to give an initial lean on that, Jeff, I think I would lean under. You know, there's enough talent on this Dallas roster that, you know, we're not going to see, you know, Cooper Flagg, I think, dependent on to be a number one option. Now, for the first half of the season, before Kyrie Irving comes back, he is going to have a chance, I think, to see elevated usage. But once Kyrie is back in the mix, you know, I think Cooper Flagg will almost be a super, super role player for this Mavericks team. And, you know, I think when you think about a talent like Cooper Flagg, you know, 16.9 points per game, that seems relatively low. Not a ton of rookies come into the NBA and are instantly averaging, you know, 17 to 20 points per game. Really only the, you know, the elite of the elite rookie seasons end up touching that. So to me, the safer play here would be on the under. You know, the rebounds per game prop, 6.1, another oddly specific number, minus 115 both ways. This one I would also lean under on. Like, he is a very good rebounder. I think we'll see him play the three and the four for the Mavericks, but keep in mind that Dallas is one of the biggest teams in the NBA in terms of legitimate size. You have Anthony Davis. They just brought back Daniel Gafford. You have Derek Lively. Like, there's a big time rebounders on this team. We're not going to see Cooper Flagg, you know, playing small ball five for the Dallas Mavericks. So for as good of a rebounder as he is, I think he's going to be battling his own teammates for a lot of those rebounds. Yeah, you know, I see him kind of finishing somewhere in that 5.5 to 6.5 rebound per game range. These are not props, Jeff, that I really feel like touching right now. There's not really enough value on the board. A couple other interesting ones that are up at FanDuel right now. Cooper Flagg to record a triple double at any point next season, minus 120. I'm staying away from that too. You got to give me plus money on a triple double. That is difficult for any rookie to attain, especially a guy who is not necessarily going to be on the ball a ton, in my opinion. So I don't think we see a triple double. I wouldn't bet that one at minus 120. And then the last one that's up at FanDuel, Cooper Flagg to score 40 plus in any game is 3-1. I don't see that happening, man. I need at least 6-7-1 for me to bet that.
Yeah. Again, like you said, there's a bunch of stayaways, but hey, these are thrown out there for the people that are thirsty, right? These are the people that really want to do something. They just saw this draft. They're so excited. Let's go. Yeah. Okay, we'll throw these out here, and they're not going to be great prices for you, but you know they'll get action for. So, hey, these casinos keep going up for a reason. Need a proxy? You can join the world's biggest football contest with one trip to Vegas anytime before the season starts. Trusted by thousands of players over the last 9 seasons, Winner's Circle Proxy Service helped clients win over $9.3 million the last 2 seasons. You can learn more about using a trusted proxy service by visiting winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. All right, Nick, let's turn our attention over to the NBA. We got news already. Breaking news. Caitlin Clark will not play again tonight. Sat out last night due to the groin injury. They're on this road trip from hell, the Fever are. Fever at Wings tonight. What do you got?
Yeah, so this is interesting. I mean, up until about 15 minutes ago, Caitlin Clark was questionable. It is a rare back-to-back for the Indiana Fever. So this will now be her 7th missed game of the season. That means she's already missed, you know, what will be over 15% of the regular season, 44 games in the WNBA. She's still plus 275 to win the WNBA MVP. We're getting to a point where if she misses, you know, 3 to 5 more games, that might be enough of the season where I think some voters will back away. So I do want to start by saying I'm not sure I would bet that right now, even at close to 3-1. You know, Fever tonight without Caitlin Clark looking to bounce back. They lost to the Sparks last night. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think Caitlin Clark, you know, since returning from that quad injury, has still been bothered either by that or by this latest groin injury. You look at her last 3 games that she's played, 28% from the field, 1 of 23. From beyond the arc, 21 turnovers. So I think there is a case here to let Caitlin Clark get healthy if she was playing through something. As far as tonight's game goes, I played the under 168 and a half. That total is now down a couple of points, 166 and a half at DraftKings. The Fever are 11 points per 100 worse on offense without Caitlin Clark on the court. The pace also decreases by about five possessions per 40 minutes without Caitlin Clark. So I think this is an underspot for me. The Fever have gone under this number pretty comfortably in all six games without Caitlin Clark already.
Indeed. Let's turn our attention to the Liberty at the Mercury. Big game here. What do you like in this one?
Yeah, big time game between two of the three or four best teams in the W. I'm looking at Satu Sabally, who's having a monster season, leading the WNBA in usage rate heading into tonight. And I'm looking at the rebounds prop. We're going over 7.5, getting that at -115. She is coming off of a 2-rebound game, but that was against the Sky. It was a blowout. You know, didn't play her normal allotment of minutes. Prior to that, she'd gone over in 4 straight and 10 of her last 12. And for as good as this Liberty team is, Jeff, they're a very poor rebounding team. They don't hit the offensive glass. They're not an elite defensive rebounding team by any means. They're second last in the WNBA in terms of total rebound percentage, and they give up the second most rebounds per game to opponents. Part of the reason for that is they're without Jonquel Jones, kind of their big woman in the middle. So Satu Sabally over 7.5 boards tonight. That's the play.
Indeed. So it's interesting. We got 2 versus 3 against each other and 1 versus 4. Another huge game. Lynx at the Dream. Obviously, yep. Checking on Collier's status here.
Yeah, Nafisa Collier, who is currently your WNBA MVP favorite. She has moved from questionable to probable, has been dealing with a back issue that's already cost her the last couple of games. So we did see, depending on where you're looking, the line shift about a point, point and a half in favor of Minnesota once we got that update on Collier. So it looks like she's going to play. Like you said, these are two of the best teams in the league. Minnesota plus 12.7 net rating on the year, Atlanta plus 8.3. You know, if Collier was going to sit out, this was another spot where I would look at the under. I still would. You know, the total's up 3 points now with her expected to play up to 159.5. I still do lean under there. These are two of the slowest paced teams in the WNBA. Minnesota number one in the league in defense. In terms of the prop market, I'm going to grab Kayla McBride over 2.5 made threes, getting that at plus 120. She's basically either hit this or gone completely cold in every game this season. She's hit it in 6 of 10 overall, already has 3 games this year with at least 5 3-pointers, coming off of an 0 of 7 from 3 game against Washington. I think this is a bounce back spot for Kayla McBride. So we'll take a chance on that at plus 120.
I always like the healthy bounce back games. You know, it's one thing if there's an explanation, you know, there's an injury or something like that, but established player bouncing back from a tough game, see it all the time. We're going to switch over to the NFL coming up next. Alan Soslowski is going to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. This is Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. We've talked a lot of basketball. We're going to shift over to football now. Training camp is right around the corner. Who better to join us than Alan Soslowski from RotoWire? Follow him on Twitter at Alan Soslowski. And of course, read everything he has to write about over at RotoWire.com and check him out on RotoWire's YouTube channels as well. Alan, welcome to the show. I know you've got some sleepers that are Jacksonville oriented, just right up Nick Whalen's alley here that you wanted to talk about. So let's just jump right into it here. Why are you big on Bishal Tuten?
Yeah, you know, I really did not want to have Jacksonville love in this segment here, but because Nick is a big fan, but they really are the offense that I'm pinpointing for some serious upside. And the reason is there's a lot of similarities here between last year's Tampa Bay team and this year's Jacksonville team. Most notably, that Liam Cohen, the new head coach of Jacksonville, really is getting credited with fixing distressed number one overall pick Baker Mayfield last year, and now has another opportunity to do it with another fake generational prospect in Trevor Lawrence. Now, if they can get even average quarterback play from Trevor Lawrence, which doesn't seem to be much of a high bar to clear, I think that all the weapons around him can end up being elite, and you don't really have to pay for them outside of Brian Thomas in fantasy football drafts. And that's what we want, right? Like, we know in the first round, you're not going to get a bad player, but as people play in their fantasy football leagues, it's finding players in round 5 through 8 and even later in like the double digit rounds that really are going to make our fantasy football teams go. You asked about Bashal Tutin, the rookie running back that was drafted in the fourth round by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And again, there's a lot of similarities here between what the Tampa Bay did last year with Bucky Irving, who was kind of an afterthought because Rashad White on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was the entrenched starter coming off a great year. And they also had Sean Tucker, who was, you know, a solid backup. Let's you know, juxtapose that over with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you have Travis Etienne, who is the entrenched starter, you know, was a former first round pick, and of course Tank Bigsby is over there as well. That seems a lot like similar to Tucker. So, you know, you add that up, you add in that they spent the number two overall pick with Travis Hunter. This team is ready to produce some fantasy gold. And I really like Bashal Tutin, the running back that they took in the fourth round as a sleeper you can get in the 10th, 12th, or maybe even later, as if he doesn't pop in training camp.
Alan, I love that you talked about two Jacksonville Jaguars that you like this season in Trevor Lawrence and Bashal Tutin, and still found a way to like diss the Jaguars and Lawrence overall. Just a really ideal way to thread the needle on that. So I got to ask you as a follow-up here, strategy-wise, if you like Bashal Tutin, does that mean you are out on Travis Etienne and or Tank Bigsby? Or given where these guys are going in drafts right now, would you consider taking two of the three? Would you stack them? Would you essentially hedge that backfield depending on the format?
One of the lamest things to do in fantasy football analysis is say, well, I'm going to be in 15 leagues, so I can get a share of each one. Most of us are not in 15, 20, 30 leagues. I am. But most people play in a few leagues, right? So you have to really pick your spots here. And I think that at where these players are getting drafted by consensus ADP and over rotowire.com, where we have our consensus rankings, it doesn't cost you much to get all of them and see which one. Now, I would focus more on Travis Etienne, who probably you don't even have to spend more than like a 7th or 8th round pick on. And then Tutin, we just talked about, you get him in the 10th or 12th round. And again, in some leagues, it depending on how sharp they are, it might even be later than that. And Bigsby more or less goes undrafted in a 15 or 16 round draft. So you could collect two of the three and see which one pops. And, you know, it might be neither, might be all. So I think in particular, in most years when you have a rookie coming in, you have to spend like a 4th or 5th round pick on the entrenched starter. That was the case for Rashad White last year. And then you have to spend like, you know, a 9th or 8th round pick on the backup. Here, like you just pointed out, you can take both. You can take either one. My bet is on Tutin, but I have no problem if somebody wants to place a chip on Etienne, only because the cost in most drafts by consensus ranking is not prohibitive at all.
All right, Alan, let's talk a couple of wide receivers. I know it's trendy to get a lot of early wide receivers, but sometimes we got to dig a little bit deeper into our drafts, mid to late rounds, to get some depth at the position. I know you got a couple of guys for us, one mid-round guy, one late-round guy. Who do you like as those sleeper wide receivers for us?
Yeah, I think the Bills' second-year man, Keon Coleman, who was basically drafted at the very top of the second round in last year's draft, is a sneaky buy-low or sleeper in fantasy football terms. And he goes around the 8th round in most drafts. That's going to vary depending on the size of the league and, of course, you know, the experienced players in there. But Keon Coleman was ready for a mega breakout in weeks 6 and 7 before he got injured in week 8. Sorry, it was in week 7 and 8 before he got injured in week 9, guys. He had 125 receiving yards, and then the next week he had 70 receiving yards and a touchdown. He was ready to explode, and still only 22 years old. He is probably has as good a chance as any to be the Bills' number one pass-catching option, if not by reception, certainly by touchdowns. That's the thing with the Buffalo Bills, guys. There's no declared number one alpha receiver. They spent a high draft pick on Keon Coleman. I think that they're going to at least explore the opportunity to get him the ball. If Keon Coleman was going in the 4th or 5th rounds of your fantasy draft, it does carry a lot of risk. But in the 8th round, the opportunity to get Josh Allen, the number one or number two quarterback in the NFL's number one target, that is truly what a sleeper is in fantasy football.
Alan, I want to ask you about a tight end out in Green Bay. I'm looking at the average draft position over at the NFFC, which hosts a lot of high money expert leagues. Just looking at the last month here, this guy's the tight end 12. You can get him, you know, well after pick 100. He's going about pick 125 on average. I know you're taking a look at Tucker Kraft. And my question is, Alan, are you comfortable with him as your tight end one, or is he somebody where if you're going early tight end, maybe you take a mid round tight end, you know, you grab Tucker Kraft as kind of an upside play later in the draft?
Yeah, there's the have and have nots in fantasy football leagues this year with tight ends. Basically, tight end strategy, as it seems to be, is you're going to take Brock Bowers on the Raiders, or you're going to look at Trey McBride on the Cardinals in the first two or three rounds. After that, it just seems like anybody can finish as the tight end three. So I think what the best strategy is in your fantasy leagues is to not jump up into the fifth round or the sixth round of your league and take a stab at one of those Sam Laporta or even George Kittle, which, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more forgiving if somebody does that. It is George Kittle. But once you get into like round 9 or round 12 in that span, there's less opportunity cost of giving up a good running back, giving up an elite quarterback. So it's not that I like love Tucker Kraft. I just think he's got as good chance as any to be the tight end three, tight end four. Usually what we see is the player that gets 8 or 10 touchdowns in the year at the tight end position ends up being the tight end three or tight end five in that range every year. It doesn't even matter how many receptions or yards. And what I liked about Kraft specifically is that even though it's a crowded wide receiver and pass catcher core, they added Matthew Golden in the first round of the NFL draft. Of course, they have Jaden Reed coming back. And, you know, Christian Watson's going to be out. But it's the way that Jordan Love, the quarterback, has been talking about Kraft, saying that he is going to be a focal point of the offense. And he can do it all, right? He could catch passes over the middle. He certainly has sure-handed. And he's going to be a red zone weapon. So to make a bet on tight end, there's a bunch of in that area. I'm not going to pay up this year in the fifth round if I don't get one of those elite guys. So in my fantasy football leagues, Kraft is the guy I've pinpointed as my sleep position.
We're going to talk starting QB bets next, but first, if you're serious about winning football this season, the VSiN NFL betting guide is your first real edge. Coming out Tuesday, July 1st, it's packed with in-depth previews of all 32 teams, season win total breakdowns, best bets from trusted VSiN experts, player props and betting projections, everything you need to bet smarter all season long. Kick off your season with confidence and get full access to every VSiN betting guide, daily best bet emails, and exclusive content through the Super Bowl, all for just $175. Your smartest NFL season bet starts now at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, Alan, lightning round, 15 seconds per answer here on these, buddy. Who should start for the Browns? What, you know, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, who are you betting on?
I think if you're looking at the odds, you have to love the plus 200 on Kenny Pickett. They traded away to pick to get him.
All right. Let's talk about the Saints. Tyler Shuck, Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener. Shuck, a heavy favorite at minus 310. What's your bet?
Yeah, just from a betting perspective here, I think you have to go with Rattler, right? I mean, Tyler Shuck, he is a rookie. Rookie starting week one is a dicey proposition. Rattler at least has experience. So even though I think it's going to be Shuck, I think that Rattler's the value.
All right. We'll have to save the Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones discourse for another time, let alone the Giants. That just takes way too much time. We can't rush through that one there. Alan, great stuff as always. Thanks for coming on board with us today. He is Alan Soslowski. We are talking baseball over-unders coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson here with you for 15 more minutes, taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, we're handing it off to our guy Adam Schein. Make it rain coming up next here on VSiN. But first, Jeff, we have a big weekend, a big Friday slate coming our way in Major League Baseball. I know you have a bunch of best bets for us, so let's get right down to brass tacks. We'll start the Cardinals and the Guardians, big series out in Cleveland. We have St. Louis as a road favorite, minus 131 on the money line. Guardians plus 107 over at DK. Total coming in at 8.5. Luis L. Ortiz taking on Sonny Gray. Starting off with a money line play, Jeff, what do you like?
Yeah, I like Cleveland as a home underdog here. And the reason why this is matched up like this is that, you know, the Cardinals have a nominally better record. Gray versus Ortiz, that appears to be a mismatch on the surface. But the Cardinals, they're worse on the road than they are at home. 18-21 on the road. They just finished a long homestand. Sonny Gray has been demonstrably worse on the road. 5.88 ERA, 1.27 whip this year. Last year is 5.20 ERA on the road, 1.21 whip. You compare that versus overall numbers, you know, 3.72 ERA overall this year. You can see it's been definitely way worse on the road than at home. And Cleveland, it's the opposite. Ortiz has been much better at home. He's not a great pitcher. Let's not gild the lily here. I mean, he's a 4.30 ERA guy, but it's a 3 ERA at home. So much better at home than on the road. So with all that in mind, I kind of like going with the money line here in favor of the Guardians at +107. Getting some plus money for, I think, an equal team, if not slightly better, at home.
All right, I like it. And we've actually seen some line movement, Jeff. A huge shift. It's now +109 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Woo! So you're picking up a ton of value now if you waited a bit. Yeah, let's go. All right, so we're starting off with plus money on the Guardians. Dodgers are on the road at the Kansas City Royals. This is Dustin May taking on my guy, Noah Cameron. We got a righty going up against the lefty. Dodgers -156 on the money line. Slightly higher total here at 9.5. And I know you are zeroed in on that total.
I am. It's an interesting matchup here because the Dodgers are scary. You don't ever want to do under bets on the Dodgers. But at 9.5, that's a pretty high number in a ballpark in Kauffman Stadium that it does tend to suppress power to begin with, their suppress run scoring for that matter as a whole. The Royals are objectively terrible, just terrible offensively. 80 WRC plus, 290 WOBA, 136 ISO, just 13 homers all season long at home. They just don't hit for a whole lot of power. I know May struggled a little bit last time out. Nats got him for 3 homers, but that ballpark shouldn't, you know, should suppress that a little bit there. And the Royals, I mean, I just don't think they're going to hit for a whole lot of power. Cameron's decent, too. I know the Yankees got him for 6 runs, but that's the one bad start he's had all season. So I like the under 9.5 at -105 here.
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. I mean, we're looking at a Dodgers team that scored, 3 runs yesterday in a 3-1 win over the Rockies. Total on that one was 12.5. So there is some recent precedent for the Dodgers failing to hit a total. So under 9.5, we like for Dodgers Royals. The A's go to Yankee Stadium this weekend, starting a 3-game set. Yankees big favorites on the money line, as you'd expect. -267 is the price. Total in this one down at 8. Mitch Spence taking on Will Warren. What do we like for Will Warren tonight, Jeff?
Well, I like strikeouts. I think I like pitching in general here. It's much like the game last night in Citi Field in New York. The temperature is down. That hot streak is broken. The hot weather streak, that is. Temperatures should be in the low 70s. Whatever wind there is going to be blowing in. Warren, 29.4% K percentage. The A's, they strike out a bunch, 25% K percentage in the last 30 days. Seems like a good combo to have. I know Warren's pretty volatile, but you know, I think the weather will help him a little bit. The weather should keep him in the game longer. At 6.5 strikeouts, it's an aggressive K prop, but I'm going to still go with it at -135. Mm-hmm. I saw earlier Ariel Epstein had it at a better price. I think she had it at -110. So look around. I was just looking at DraftKings when I was doing this here. Find a better prop if you can, better price if you can. But I like the over 6.5 Ks. I thought about keeping on with the under and Yankees game streak here. It's at 8, though, and betting unders while accounting for Athletics pitchers doesn't strike me as a wise thing, especially when the total is that low. So I'm going to stay away from that. I wanted to do it, just couldn't get there.
Fair enough. It has been an interesting couple of weeks for the New York Yankees, who, by my count, Jeff, have not gone over in a single game since June 11th, that they had one push in that span. But I think that's like 14 unders and one push in their last 15 games. So certainly a trend to keep an eye on. Let's go to your team, Jeff. Cincinnati Reds are home this weekend hosting the San Diego Padres. Should be a really fun series. We start out tonight with Dylan Cease taking on Nick Martinez. Total on this one coming in at 9, Padres -132 on the money line.
And the pitching matchup is why the Padres are favored. They're -132 on the road. Even though they're 19-22 on the road, the Reds have a winning record at home. Padres are significantly better in Petco, 25-14 at home. Almost all of their buffer has been built at home in Petco. Cease in particular has been better at home than on the road. 6.26 road ERA. Two horrific outings account mostly for that. Remember, he had that game in Sacramento against the Athletics where he gave up 9 runs early in the season, maybe second or third start of the year. And then just recently, though, 6 starts against the Dodgers. Who are the Dodgers? Reds are not that, but they're decent. They might be getting Austin Hayes back for this game. But on the other side of things here, Nick Martinez, his last start was on the 19th. He had a poor home start against the Twins. That was a day game. He's had since then 2 relief outings, kind of because he didn't get the work in there, kind of kept everybody like Brady Singer on track. Weather's supposed to be warm, 90 degrees, modest wind. I think the ball's going to carry in Great American Ballpark. Even though I like the revenge factor for Martinez as a former Padre, it isn't really working in his favor. Struggled against them twice last year. I wanted to try to get there with the Reds money line at +109. And again, relatively even home team getting plus money seems like a decent formula, but Martinez keeps me away from that there. So I'm just going to bet the over. Mm-hmm. Over 9 runs scored, -117.
Okay, I want to finish out with one more, Jeff. And this is the outlier total on the board for Friday's slate. We got one game coming in at 8. That is Astros and the Cubs. We got a total of 7 in Mariners Rangers tonight. Seattle, a slight favorite on the money line. Logan Gilbert taking on Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, and 2 good pitchers. Eovaldi coming back, though, from his first from the trip to the aisle for a triceps injury. He bypassed all rehab outings, so I don't know how deep he goes into games. And as a matter of fact, if you look at like the outs recorded pitching props, DK won't put one out there for Eovaldi. So that kind of gives you an idea. They're not quite sure how deep into this game he's going to be able to go. However, I like a lot of the Logan Gilbert action here. Texas, we've seen them struggle. I know they scored a couple times against the Orioles, but that's the Orioles pitching staff here. Texas is 23rd in the league in WOBA, 19th in WRC plus for the last 30 days. But the splits are worse. Versus right-handed pitchers, 297 WOBA, 90 WRC plus, and they're even worse at home. 283 WOBA at home, 80 WRC plus at home. They really struggle at home. Meanwhile, Logan Gilbert, he's a strikeout machine, 38% K percentage this year, up from 27.4 last year, which is already pretty high. So I like the Logan Gilbert over 6.5 Ks at -130. I like the under on the Rangers team total at at 3.5. It's a -140 bet, though. So if you want to try to get a plus money bet, maybe investigate the alternate run total at under 2.5, where you get at +140.
It's time for our best bets of the night, closing out the show here on Prop Points. Best bets, as always, brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSIN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 over at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSIN completes the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription, taking you all the way through October 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSIN. You can head over to VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Again, you can apply today over at VSIN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, take us into the weekend. Your GBank best bet of the night.
We laid out the case already for the Guardians money line. It's now, like you said, up to +109, but when I put this in, it was at +107. We'll roll with that. Go Guardians.
All right, there we have it. I'm looking at the over 8.5 in Twins Tigers tonight. That number's actually crept up to 9 now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. So glad we locked that in at 8.5. I thought David Fester was going to start, Jeff. There apparently is now some sort of decision to be made. It is listed as undecided, according to the page that I'm looking at right now. If David Fester is indeed out there, I like this even more. We're on to Woods Richardson. Okay, well, regardless, we like the over. Twins been giving up a ton of runs. They've been scoring runs of late. Give me that over 8.5. That's going to do it for the Friday edition of Prop Points. Have a great weekend. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next.